Thanks for listening to the Drummer's Weekly Groovecast. You can contact the show at twitter.com/DW Groovecast and through Facebook at facebook.com/Drummer's Weekly Groovecast.
Good evening.
I am warning you right now, if you touch my drums, I will stab you in the neck with a knife.
Ain't a fucking. Ain't a fucking.
Mom!
Take it easy. Lower it.
I'm not going to lower it. I have to do this now.
I don't mind
playing
it, but lower it.
We got straight now?
No, we had a problem. I mean, we tried to do everything we could.
What do you mean?
Well, you know what I mean.
Nice. Little trouble there. You're rushing.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Yeah.
Welcome to the 11th hour Drummer's Weekly Groovecast.
Yeah, by the skin of our teeth this week.
You know, I don't want to pull that curtain back from Oz, but we're recording this sucker just a mere few hours before it actually goes up, goes live, you know?
Schedules were a little wacky this past week, but hey, yeah. we're gonna deliver.
We're going to deliver. That's exactly right. I think it's probably worth mentioning that we've had a rather busy last week and a half or so. You and I have both been on the road a little bit. So yeah.
I wanted to get as far away from the picking a teacher topic as possible, so I went home to Illinois with my fingers in my ears while Phil did his magic little advertisement.
Well, okay. Duly noted, sir.
Digital billboard, if you will.
let me say this now, okay? In all honesty, I actually recorded that thing months ago.
Mm-hmm.
I had it in the old hip pocket.
Thank God.
You know, the old break glass in case of emergency.
It was, and it worked well. So thank you for covering my pathetic butt.
Oh, and we're damn nigh emergency right now, because we normally to tell the folks out there, we normally like to be several days in advance.
That's but helpful.
We're right up again it.
Well, I've got my circa 1976 realistic tape recorder ready to roll if you need me to cover on this end, if you got to go, you know, take care of some business.
I was going to say, why don't we just put it straight to vinyl, man? Just cut directly on a Scully lathe.
I'm going to do all my solo podcasts at Sheffield Labs. Pressure's on. Can we pause? Nope.
John, how have you been, man? It seems like it's been a little while.
It has been. Yep. I went home and took care of some business, and I'm back and ready to roll, but I missed you.
Oh, and, likewise, man.
I'm excited about getting back. We got some great topics coming up, and an interview or two that's looking pretty solid. So
there's one in particular that's I'm really getting excited about that we're going to have to get in the car again and head out.
That's going to rule.
We're going to call it a regional trip that we're going to make.
Nah, we're going to leave it at that. Let's just not even.
Yeah.
Clue. That leave the clues out. You'll hear it soon enough.
Yeah. So, folks, we're glad to be back with you. As always, please make sure you reach out to us. You can email us at our Gmail account, drummersweeklygroovecast@gmail.com. Always reach out to us at Facebook. We're at facebook.com/drummersweeklygroovecast. And the ever-burgeoning Twitter account, twitter.com/DW Groovecast. I love watching those Twitter followers come up.
Yeah, that's nice, man.
You know?
It makes you feel good.
Even if it's from some slightly dubious names that pop up from time to time. There was one that was just like Loud Guy that came.
Hey.
So we know somebody's listening.
He's probably a drummer.
Obviously. And by the way, I'm going to go ahead and throw something out there, and I know you're listening, so make yourself known or make yourselves known. we have gotten, John, some sort of little drumming cabal happening out in the Bay Area. I don't know if it's a school out there or if it's just a little drummer's round table, but again, not to pull the curtain back from Oz here, we can tell a lot of times who's listening to the show, or at least we can tell where they're listening from. Mm-hmm. And it seems like every week we get a whole bunch of listeners from San Francisco, Palo Alto, in Oakland.
Interesting.
And I mean a bunch. I mean, well more concentrated out there than in other. I mean, we have listeners all over the country and all over the world, but it seems like the Bay Area listeners really come in. So, Bay Area listeners, let us know what's going on out there. Send us a quick email or a shout or something, and let us know if it's like a school, of music that might be listening or something, or you know.
It's probably my well-documented history of jam band drumming that they're all
keep going. John.
They're all in. Wait.
You,
no, it's not.
You spent.
It's got to be a school.
You spent a bit of time out there, man. It's been, yeah, been a minute, but you spent a time, a little bit.
You know
of
time. What's interesting? When I was out there, I played twice in my garage. I took a complete break from playing, pretty much.
Wow.
Yep. Didn't pursue anything musically. I just went to the beach and
a cold beach, probably.
Waited some tables and enjoyed San Francisco for all its awesomeness.
I never ask you this. We've talked about you living out there. What part of town did you live in?
I lived in Half Moon Bay initially. A friend of mine worked for that old Passport software company, and they were based there.
Sir, on the very computer that this podcast is recording on, mm-hmm, as we speak, I have Encore Music Notation Software.
That's crazy.
From Passport.
Yep. And when I lived there, I actually lived west of the highway.
You were in the ocean, basically.
Almost. Yeah. In Half Moon Bay, the road comes in a little bit, so it's a little like four-block neighborhood, like subdivision, and we rented a house there. So I tell people, oh, yeah, I lived west of the highway. They're like, oh, you lived on a boat? Like,
yeah, no. Really?
But I lived up in the kind of the Berkeley, Oakland, where they come together, that area for a little while, too.
Yeah. By the way, not to delay our topic of the day any longer, but I saw in the news today, mm-hmm, where part of Highway 1 collapsed, man, near Big Sur.
I saw that, too. I didn't look at the details, but that sucks nonetheless.
Dude, my convertible Mustang drove right over that a mere few months ago.
Maybe that's what it was.
I did eat a burrito prior to
the size of your head. I remember the first time I ever went to a, you know, choose your own ingredients burrito place. It was in the Mission District, and their whole selling point was burritos the size of your head, and they were honest. And we'd eat for 2 days. So the Mission District, I miss that city, man. I really love that city.
Man, no reflection, Los Angeles, but let's just call San Francisco the jewel of California.
It's amazing, yeah. That's more probably, that might be my favorite city on the planet. It's so great.
You're going to be hard to get an argument from me, yeah. I'll tell you that.
And, good stuff. We are envious of you Bay Area listeners for your location and enjoying all the amazing things that area has to offer.
Let me tell you, if it were possible to pick my house up and move it out there, here's what I would do. I'd pick it up, I would move it out there, put it on a piece of land, and then sell it.
And then buy
for 10,
three more houses here and do the same
that's
thing.
What I was going to say, for 10 times right. The price, yeah, of nuts. What I could sell it for here. So, but I digress. John, let's talk about some drums and stuff.
Okay.
You know, prior to hitting record on today's show, I looked over at John and I said, how in the world did we get 30 some odd episodes into this little foray and not cover the topic of auditions? And he just looked at me and he goes, because I never audition. And I said, touche, you badass.
No, that I think that might be more indifference from the music industry No, I mean, in all honesty, man, auditions, it's a weird one because the majority of guys, like working players like we are, and especially someone like me that, you know, not focused on any kind of legit thing or, you know, shows or anything like that, you rarely audition for anything. I think I told you I had one audition for a house gig. And before that, maybe it was like an all-state jazz band, you know? So it's a, auditions are an interesting thing, but connected more to certain paths. But there's a lot of valuable insight, I think, that we could kind of get into that any one of us could come up against at any time.
Yeah, and I'll say this. I feel like that this topic of auditions is it's going to be one that probably gets the nerves up on a lot of people. I mean, it is you are under the microscope, you know, when you go in for an audition. And so it's a pretty nerve-wracking thing, you know, regardless. I mean, you can still be a great player, and the unknown aspect of an audition is the super scary part. And so we're going to cover a little bit of that, the different types of auditions that we are commonplace.
It is tough, man. It's just, you make it, we're our own worst enemies in that situation most of the time, you know, just making a mountain out of a molehill. Or you think it's going to be all high pressure and you walk in and everybody's real cool. You know, we just kind of, we can build it up to be way more difficult than it needs to be. So let's tackle some of that nonsense, and I'll pray for you people who audition.
Duly noted.
As I continue playing my gigs where I have dirt on band leaders and stuff.
Well, first, let's go ahead and talk about a few of the different common situations that you're going to audition for. And then what we'll do is we'll talk about sort of the different aspects that are common, you know, to these different style of auditions. So first off, you've got just your traditional band style audition, you know, like you might be a rock band, jazz band, whatever type thing. So you got that type of audition. You've also got an audition to go to school, like to go to college, or possibly even an audition inside of that college to be in a certain ensemble. So you got that also. Okay, and then you've got the ever popular and incredibly nerve-wracking, from what I understand, orchestral style audition.
Dude, the stories I've heard make me cringe.
It's, oh, I know fellas that have been successful at doing these, but prior to that have literally had to seek like psychological counseling. Because, you know, a lot of those things are done behind like a curtain.
I need psychological counseling even if I get the gig. I couldn't imagine that.
I've got a buddy that has auditioned, is a percussionist, that has auditioned for a few different orchestras. And I would ask him after the fact, I'd say, how did it go? And he literally said, man, I missed a note.
Oh.
Missed a note.
That you could just leave it at that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I missed a note. That's and I mean, unreal. That pretty much knocked him out of the running. I missed a note. So anyway, moving on. And then
I need psychological counseling just hearing that story.
And then you got the larger corporate style gigs, and we'll call there's a bunch of these. There's a bunch of these different type gigs, and some of them you could say there are some theme parks that you can audition for. There are circuses, cruise ships, casino gigs, and to some extent, church gigs.
That's true
as well. So, John, let's go ahead and start talking about the commonalities of a lot of these things.
Okay. All right.
And so, first and foremost, and this is the one that you and I also we scratch our heads at from time to time, and that is, how do you find auditions? How do you hear about them happening?
Yeah.
Mystery.
That's some of these I can't even speak to just because I don't search them out or haven't talked to anyone who's got into it. Like, I know you could really speak to some of the corporate things, like a little more of the show aspect.
Yeah.
But I mean, man, I rarely, like, that myth of the cattle call audition, that's just really not terribly realistic. It, you know, I'm sure that's happened, and I'm sure some people have just been discovered, but for the most part, you know, the auditions in my world are typically word of mouth.
Yeah.
You're recommended along with a couple of two or three other guys, you know, by people connected to the artist in some way, shape, or form, or the band. And, you know, you, it's kind of almost a given you could do the gig. You go in and see how it gels. So that's really, I would say, more than anything in the working world, that's going to be what it is.
And to speak to your point, even on some of the larger corporate style gigs that I've auditioned mm-hmm. for, they do a lot of times advertise like on their websites, but the majority of the time when I've gotten hip to them, it's somebody that's either contacted me about it.
Pointing it out.
You know, and said, hey,
it's coming up.
Yeah, this, you know, look for this.
Yeah.
So still, yeah, that word of mouth thing is absolutely invaluable. You know, and while we're on that point, John said something about recommendation of fellow musicians. This is another thing that was talked about in a previous interview with Lil John Roberts. Don't forget that if you are recommended and ultimately accept an audition from a fellow musician, go in there and do a great job.
Reflex on them.
Yeah, don't make the guy that recommended you look like a chump.
Yeah, man. I am ever mindful of that, and I kind of preach that to anyone who will listen. You know, even if it's covering a gig, mm-hmm. a one-off thing, man, your reputation suffers at the hand of a person that doesn't go in and nail it. And you wouldn't want that to happen to you. Don't do it to somebody else.
Yeah, I actually was on the bad end of that one time.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And it was only two songs. That's what's even...
John, I try to get you hooked up with the mouse, and then you do this to me, right?
Man, look. No, I'm not even going to say it.
You know, John, another way that folks can find out about auditions...
They wouldn't let me wear the princess outfit, so screw them.
Yeah, but you told them your drumsticks were like your little magic wand,
they
right?
were. Have you ever heard me play?
Another great way that you can find out about auditions are in the local trade papers and even the national trade papers. And mm-hmm. what we mean by that primarily is any of you folks that are in the union, you get this little monthly mailing that comes in. It's a newspaper type thing. And in the back, you will see a plethora of auditions. Now, I'll be the first one to say that 99% of those are orchestral openings, right. You know. However, you do find the occasional nugget in there. So, you know, keep your eyes open if you're not an orchestral player also, and if you're in the union for that as well. And then last thing before we start getting into maybe talking about how you actually prepare for auditions and the things you need for auditions, I want to just say, I want everybody to be careful about, we'll call it auditioning to the audition. In other words, just taking every audition that comes your way. Now, some people have a different thought about this. Some people think that all auditions are great auditions. I don't feel that way, John. And my process of thought on this is basically this. If you just take every audition that comes your way, there's no way that you're really interested and really want to do every single one of those. You're just kind of practicing your auditions is what it is. Mm. And I feel like a lot of times that can be more detrimental than helpful simply from the standpoint there's a good chance you're not going to be totally prepared or at least not have your full being into these auditions. And we've proven it time and time again on this show through different topics and different interviews that the musician's grapevine is so small that if you roll into an audition that you don't really care about and you're just doing it to audition, if you go in there and just blow it out of the water and do a terrible job, that can set you back
yeah.
significantly more than helping you out and just learning how to do an audition.
true. I think what I take away from that is clearly the people that do that don't have Netflix.
Well spoken.
Because I'm not going to any audition. I don't want the gig on. I got to catch up on some shows, man.
Oh, man, I've heard...
80 channels of cable, baby.
I've heard people talk about it, man. They're just like, man, I don't really care anything about this gig, but, I mean, I just need practice auditioning. Really?
That's kind of... Like you said, man, if... It's no skin off your back. If you go and do a good job and you don't get the gig, you present yourself well and all that, but what if you blow it? Mm-hmm. Boy, people will talk about that like there's no tomorrow. Even the people with... great intentions and a good heart could be like, you might hear about someone just blowing, you know, sometimes we hear about someone blowing a gig, you know, and it's like, whoa.
I mean, a perfect case in point, and John, I know you know this story. We know of all of the hundreds of great sessions that Jeff Porcaro played on.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like when anybody ever wants to talk about Porcaro, seems like invariably that one story of him doing that session, I think it was with Ricky Lee Jones.
That sounds right.
Yeah, where he just got frustrated and just he couldn't give her what she wanted, and he just took the drumsticks and just slammed them straight through the drum heads. Everybody likes to talk about that.
Yeah. Fortunately, there's a whole bunch of people who want to talk about how amazing he was as a player and a person, but that story is, I think that story happens to be brought up a lot just because it was so unlike him.
Yeah.
You know, and that, I mean, really, because there's just nothing but glowing reviews about this guy, and that story comes up because it's just shocking. So,
yeah,
you know, but more to the point though, if you go in and just suck it up,
yeah,
you know, man, I like that on a gig I haven't done before. Like, give me every opportunity to be prepared. Because I go in and, you know, not know some stuff. That dude might be like, oh, man, this guy's just all right, whatever. I didn't know 12 tunes. Well, I'm not going to be shining, you know. So
yeah,
give me the chance to. Or, you know, taking gigs. It's kind of like along the lines of taking gigs that you're not. It's not your forte. Like, if I went on a Latin gig, there might be five guys that go, man, that guy sucks. Because that's just not my thing, you know? It's just, there's nothing good's coming out of that. But at the same time, man, it's like, audition for things that you clearly are interested in, because that's what we want to do. We don't want to, what if you get offered the gig you don't care about, and you're stuck, I got to take it, I need the money, and you're miserable. That's a drag too for everybody.
And I think that we're going to cover some different ways to help you get more comfortable and prepared with auditions, to where you don't have to just take every single thing that comes your way just so that you can practice your auditions.
Right.
So there's other ways around it, in other words.
Definitely.
You know, that we'll talk about. So now that you've kind of put yourself out there and you've heard about a few auditions, let's talk about getting yourself prepared. So there are certain things that I feel like everybody needs to have, that's, if you're auditioning or thinking about auditioning, you need to have some things close at hand, or at least something that won't take you long to get your hands on. Because virtually in every case, before you see someone face to face, you're going to have to give them something, whether it be some MP3s, or some videos, or some kind of file of some sort, pictures, whatever, right?
References, yeah.
Yeah, that type thing. So here's what I would tell everybody. If you have the opportunity, if you have the chance to make some recordings or have some friends come out to gigs with it, that have some video equipment, it would be of great benefit to you to have on your computer some recent recordings of you playing, whether they be MP3s, video files, have some current, especially if you're going to do anything that your direct image is going to, like if you're in a certain type of an image sort of rock band or whatnot, have some current photos of you as well. It's also good to have.
So this isn't like Facebook, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What I'm saying. have a resume, especially for the corporate style gigs. They're going to want something that tells them a little bit about what you've done. And then for certain type gigs, it's also really important to have a current passport. I know, John, that there's one gig that I got where I had to literally upload pages, like the first page of my passport, mm-hmm. to a website so that they could have it on file.
Knowing you're ready to roll. It's only fair, man. You know, what if they invest all this time and you get all excited about it and you're like, oh, then you got to go spend $600 on a rushed passport. You're already in the hole.
Or either that, oh, I didn't tell you they won't let me into England.
Yeah. We had an incident.
Anyway, having those little documents.
Don't take your 13-year-old cousin/girlfriend to England. I've heard that that's not a good idea.
There's a friend of ours, John, that will go. He will go nameless and
Jerry
faceless.
Jerry Lee Lewis, in case anyone was really like, I didn't do it, okay?
a nameless, faceless friend of ours that was touring with, I'm going to say the guy's name, was touring with Dave Mason.
Uh-oh.
he and some other friends were very rudely evicted from Canada. I'll tell you that story offline, but it's good stuff, man. Yeah, so the struggle is real, folks. When it comes to this kind of stuff, have your papers in order.
You can get into Canada without a passport. You just got to have a history. I did it. They let me go because there was a history of my touring there.
Man, the last time I was up there, which was about 2.5 years ago, I had to have a passport.
Well, this was post 9/11. I didn't think any of it because I had been to Canada a number of times with just my driver's license. And post 9/11, it changed. We get up there and we're like in no man's land.
Yeah.
And they're like, the airline I came in, I was like, we're not taking you back.
Yeah.
And we had to convince the Canadian authorities. They looked up my history and saw, oh, he's a musician. He tours through this. He's done it 3 or 4 times. I think he's legit. We'll let him in. But just bring your passport. I'll shut up now.
Next week's show is going to be called Skirting Law with John.
This might be the longest podcast we'll have.
5-part miniseries, you know.
Phil, you could go on a month-long vacation. Oh, man.
So, now, you got the audition at hand. You've gotten the correct materials to whoever needs them there. You got videos, resumes, MP3s, whatever. Now, let's talk about actually working on music. Mm-hmm. Now, this is the one, John, that delves deep into my psychosis. But my trips to therapy are going to benefit everyone on this, because I'm going to tell you 52 different ways to put duress and stress on your body so that you don't have to take every audition that you want. I'll, you know, in other words, give you as many different ways to like make yourself sweat prior to actually getting to the audition. Because first off,
yuck.
Yeah. Auditions themselves are just nothing but anxiety producers, right?
Certainly.
So if you can actually do the things that you need to do along the lines of preparation, but also to bring some source of like anxiety on yourself prior to that, you can kind of circumvent the audition day. It's sort of like boot camp. It's Phil's audition boot camp, right? You want to go through this stuff and torture yourself prior leading up to it so that the actual day of combat is really not that big of a deal.
It's an interesting theory.
Yeah. So
Does it involve drinking?
It involves drinking strychnine.
Oh my God. I was gonna say sounds like something I'd have to drink.
Part of the whole thing is put duress on yourself by performing sick. Not really. But okay, first off, let's talk a little bit about the actual music preparation. Mm-hmm. Now, we've done entire shows on that. And even in our interviews, we've had folks talk about the importance of preparation. So we're not going to beat that up too much.
Right.
But the one thing that I would tell everybody is, even if you get materials back from the group or the corporation that you're or that you're auditioning for that are like charts, do yourself a solid and try to memorize those.
Always good, because you know we are oftentimes guilty of having a chart stick around way longer than needed.
Mm-hmm.
A crutch, you know. It's,
yeah.
I do it. You do it.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone we know, given the opportunity, might hang on to something a little longer than necessary. But trying to get into that mode, and I mean, in turn, if you're getting away from that chart, you know, you're getting deeper into what's happening more than likely. Even the best readers would tell you that.
Absolutely.
I'm gonna probably have a little extra gear or a little more focus without my nose in it, you know.
So, John, here we go into Psychopath 101. I'm going to give you one of my little tips,
okay,
to help memorize some of this stuff. Let's say that Corporation A sends me a chart, and this is going to be something that's going to be on the audition. What I will do to help myself memorize it is I will actually, on separate paper, not make notes on this chart, but write out my own chart as well. Because I think a couple of things ends up happening when you do that. One, there's this weird connection of like hand to pencil, pencil to paper.
Mm-hmm.
That is,
and then the process to memory.
Yeah.
Definitely.
It there's something about that connection. I think it's incredibly important. And so that's why I tell a lot of my students that when you're doing something, if you do something like that, actually stay away from the computer. Stay away from using the software when you're doing that, if mm-hmm. you're trying to memorize it. There's something about that weird connection, man, of like hand to pencil, you know, and then that pencil to paper. That helps out a lot in the memorization process. And then I think another thing is this, is that when we write our own charts, we have our own little bits of like shorthand and little bits of notation that means more to us than anyone else. And mm-hmm. sometimes that can do a good visual imprint in your memorization and help out a lot.
Yeah, I agree. I think whenever I write something out, you're just kind of seeing the form and creating that form and connecting to that form. That for me, at least, it's not picture perfect memory or anything like that, but the process of breaking down that tune into, you know, its arrangement and all that and writing it down, like you said, yep, man, it really can make a big difference.
It helps me out tremendously. Virtually anything I have any trouble with in memorizing, if I sit down and write it out, and again, this doesn't even have to be on like proper staff paper. I can even make my own little ham-fisted notes in like a spiral-bound notebook,
mm-hmm.
and that will do the trick virtually every single time.
Yeah. I mean, for you people that actually remember things.
Now, John, there is the occasional time as well that you might be up for a gig where there has to be a little bit of reading, like sight reading.
Mm-hmm.
I tell everybody, practice sight reading. You never know, man, on the gig when they're going to pull out a chart and have you read something. I had that actually happen on an audition one time where somebody pulled out a chart, put it in front. Let's just see how you interpret this. No big deal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that carries over into gigs that you don't read on too, though, because I was telling you earlier, there's some artists that are notorious for, they want it note for note to the record, you know, down to even like guitar solos and stuff like that. And everybody knows it. It's legendary, if you will. And I had a friend that auditioned for one of these artists, and he was so locked into, you know, nailing it note for note and all that. And when he got to the audition, they kind of threw a curveball at him and said, hey, man, let's just kind of jam on this new idea here, blah, blah, blah. And it startled him so much that he kind of feels like that's why he didn't get the gig, you know. He's perfectly capable of doing that, as we all are. But if your brain's somewhere else, so there's you know, prepare for the, expect the unexpected, I guess would be the best way to put it. and be prepared for that, no matter what your preconceived notion is. Mm-hmm. There's just, sometimes they want to throw you a curveball to see how you deal.
The preconceived notion thing is really what produces the anxiety.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Because you have it in your mind that it's supposed to go a certain way,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then invariably it doesn't, you know. So this is the perfect segue into getting me into psychotherapy 202 now. Something that I've done, John, to circumvent the old butterflies of, again, really not knowing where I'm going and what kind of a room I'm going to be in, a studio I'm going to be in, or what kind of gear. I have actually done this psychotic thing where I will move my gear to different rooms when I'm practicing this stuff. Just, man, to give it a different look so it's not the same place, right?
Yeah.
It does something else as well. It forces you as well to actually carry a few pieces of gear. Like, for example, there are some auditions, especially if you're doing like a band thing, where you might have to take your kid in. So why not go ahead and you know, have a little bit of practice then of just moving it around and putting it in a different room and setting it up as part of the process. That's another thing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
So all that stuff, again, it kind of throws you off your game a little bit,
yeah.
you know, makes you adapt. And I've even mentioned as well to you before we started this that some other things that I've done is I've intentionally kind of scuttled myself when I've practiced. I would finish practicing and I would actually move the drums around a little bit to where I came back. When I would come back and practice the next time, I would have to like set the drums up again.
Or quickly adjust.
Yeah, quickly adjust them.
Yeah. It's like backline kits, man. You never have enough time to get it where you want it. So in that situation, you know, highly more pressurized, being able to zone in on what you need and where it needs to be is important.
Another thing that I do is I try to practice at different times of the day. I mean, all times of the morning, afternoon, and evening. And then sometimes try to put yourself under duress from the standpoint of make yourself go in and play when you're dead tired.
Mm-hmm.
You never know.
That's true. When was the last time you did that?
About 4 or 5 hours ago on a gig.
I was going to say, man, you have Netflix. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
Your priorities are straight.
I didn't say it was practicing. I said I was dead tired on a gig.
Oh, okay, yeah. I was confused.
Yeah.
Well, answer the question.
And what was the question again, sir?
When is the last time you partook in all this madness you're sharing?
Oh, this madness? Okay. And you know what? Let me say one more thing before I answer your question.
Okay.
And then I will answer it. And then the last thing, and this is probably the most obvious thing, is if you have friends and or family that are gluttons for punishment, make them listen to you as well.
Oh, that would never happen.
You know, I'm just saying, have somebody in front of you staring at you like cattle, because that's what's going to happen when you're at an audition anyway.
I think the best thing for me would be not family, but like if you came over and just sat there, you know, someone that I respect that plays, and that, you know, if you got it together then, you know, someone's not going to miss anything or be taken with your neat haircut or your cool shirt, you know, like a drummer saying, no, man, that ain't happening, brah.
Yeah.
That would be unnerving for me. I've done some sessions like that before, like an incredible drummer engineering, and I'm like, I don't like this.
It's like standing in front of the mirror naked.
Yeah, you got to get it together. So interesting, man, that. Like I said, I don't audition, so like that never even crosses my mind to be.
Honestly, it probably never crossed anyone else's mind either. I'm just a.
I was being nice.
Psycho.
You're right.
About that. Yeah, Phil's in his house moving his gear from room to room so he could audition.
He's going to get that gig, man. I just know it.
Now, what was your question again, John? You asked when is the last time I did this?
Yes.
The last.
I'm
avoiding.
This is not a court of law, sir.
I'm deflecting.
You are. Let's go. You're like a politician.
The last time that I did this, man, was really about three and a half years ago was when it was.
Well, if it's what I think it is, you had no choice but to do a lot of those things.
Yeah.
Because committing that to memory is going to take some work.
Yeah. There's actually, John, I don't know if I ever told you this. I'm telling the listening audiences as well. And you have to do your detective work if you want to really dig into this. There's actually a video of me during the actual audition somewhere on YouTube that was put up by said corporation.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Or maybe I did and I just, I can't, I don't want to see you at the end of your rope with your psychotic preparation, just head blowing off or something.
Yeah. I was not even wearing a cool shirt that day.
You did.
To deflect away from my anxiety.
Yeah, you should have talked to me.
You know, John, another thing, and this could be borderline creepy, but I think if you do it in a tasteful way, that this will help and aid in your, actually it'll aid in your audition preparation and also when you get there to the audition. If you're auditioning either for a company or a band or even a college, that type of thing, get online, do a little research on who it is that you're auditioning for. Now, I don't mean creeper, stalker kind of stuff.
No.
But look into who these people are, what they're about, that type of thing. That way, if nothing else, there is going to be some type of communication type thing that's happening during this audition. You're just not going to be running like cattle and not say a word to anybody.
Right.
You can at least speak intelligently.
Well, and there's also, I mean, nowadays too, man, there's so much content. You know, 30 years ago, you might never, ever have even heard the artist, for example, you're auditioning for, like even speak or something like that. Now, you know, people are so into this social media and that where you'll see people doing, you know, like you can kind of get a feel for personalities and stuff. Do your due diligence with that kind of thing, and it might put your mind at ease. You know, mm-hmm. Vince Gill loves to golf, and you're going to go audition for him. You could be like, hey, man.
You could wear that you could wear that snappy shirt that says Masters on it.
Yeah, that or, you know, or not. Because I don't want to think about it. That might be just lame.
Yeah.
See, that guy came in as a brown noser, man. Look at the Masters. Mm-hmm. Like he's been there. He got that on eBay.
So... Well, we've led our way up to the actual audition. So now let's talk about the process or the audition. First and foremost, not going to be a surprise to our long-term listeners. Whatever you do, don't be late.
Mm. Mm.
Don't be late. Be there. Be on time. And if applicable, look the part.
Yeah, you got to be, you have to, look.
Don't go into a church gig with a Slayer shirt on.
No, think. You know, man, it's just part of the business. It's part of reality. Pardon me. You got to kind of be in the ballpark.
Yeah.
You can't walk in with khakis and a polo to a rock and roll gig. Duh. I'm stating the obvious, but, you know, think. Just make it easier on yourself. Do your homework.
Then when you get in there, the next thing I think is incredibly important. Don't be fake. You got to be yourself, man. You got to be yourself not only playing-wise, but personality-wise.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to put on some big front. And then, like you mentioned before, you actually get the gig and you're with these people in this band that you've put a front up. And you're not even who you really purported yourself to be.
That sounds miserable.
Yeah. So
yeah, I'm auditioning for a New York band, man. I got to get on my Brooklyn thing. I'm not doing the accent because I don't want to be chided by you Brooklynites. But that, people think like that, though.
I'd audition for Twisted Sister, man, in a minute.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm just saying, like, people would go in thinking they got to talk like, you know, some guy from Iowa needs to go in and have his fake accent on.
That'd be like Bill Stewart. He's from Iowa.
Yeah, but he doesn't talk like that.
Neither does Keith Carlock, man.
He's from Mississippi.
He's from Mississippi, but he's a New York boy. Although he is spending a fair amount of time in Nashville these days.
Yeah, but does he talk with a New York accent?
No, he's country's chicken coop.
Thank you. That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Be okay with who you be.
Yeah.
Go in there and rock them and play your butt off.
That's perfectly leads into the next topic.
And
man,
they might have been
confident.
Annoyed by that Brooklynite drummer who wouldn't shut up.
That's true.
So you never know.
Yeah, you gotta be yourself and play with confidence, and then let the chips fall where they may. You've done everything that you could do, and you've done it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then we've already talked about it prior to this, but be prepared for anything they throw at you. I mean, John, here's a perfect example. On an audition I did one time, I went in and had all the stuff prepared and did a good job. Good enough to the point to where they sat me down in front of a camera and then started asking me these questions that had literally nothing to do about music.
Interesting.
It was I suppose probably a personality kind of thing. I had no idea this was common. All right. And so they asked these questions and I just, you know, first thing that came to mind, you know, logical answers. And then if you wanted to even throw another wrench into the cogs, then it turned into like a fashion show. They started taking pictures of me, like standing up, sitting down, standing next to another guy, taking measurements. It's bizarre, man. Absolutely. So, I mean, under no way would I have been prepared for that.
Did you get the gig?
I'm going to say yes and no, John.
Okay, that's good enough.
It's complicated.
That's good enough, but I would be pissed. You run me through that.
If I could
hook me up somehow.
If I could put my relationship status with that audition as in like a Facebook status, it would say my status with them is it's complicated.
Understood.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, man, auditions, I haven't done a lot of auditions, but
you don't say.
Yeah, I already did say that, didn't I? But see, I forgot because I'm thinking about some Netflix stuff I'm going to watch later, so I'm distracted. Listen
like
up.
Amazon Prime.
Back off. I'll run you through an audition. You couldn't. Just shut. Listen, I can think of two specific auditions I did where maybe it could help some people in a similar position. Like one, my junior year in high school, I was invited to go to the Allstate Jazz Band. And there were three chairs on that. It was first band, jazz choir, second band. The two drummers I went up against both ended up playing in the McDonald's All-American Jazz Band, if that gives you any idea of. So I was like, man, I'm going to be in the second band. I walked in to that audition loose as can be because it was like, mm-hmm. These guys are going to smoke me. I'm here. I'm going to do something. I know what I'm going to do. They know what I'm going to do. And I went in and killed it because there was no pressure whatsoever. It was just like, so if you can get in that headspace, not that you're defeated, but this is a long-winded way of getting to the success I had in that particular audition was I played within myself.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't try to do something I couldn't. I just said, okay, I'm going to do what I do best. I'm going to play like I play because it doesn't matter. And more importantly, at least I won't embarrass myself with these monsters coming in. So just do your thing. And be cool and don't try to be something you think they want if you can't do it. I can't play like Buddy Rich, so I'm not going to go in there and try to do it.
You were honest with yourself, yeah, was what it was. Like, you were being honest with yourself about
yes,
doing
and
that.
And defeatist in a certain sense, but rightfully so because these guys both were clearly just incredible players. But, hey, man, you got nothing to lose, you know. Try to get in that space somewhat if you can, where it's like, man, I'm going to do the best job I can, and that's okay. That's a difficult place to get to, but if you can do it, I think you got a better shot of really shining. And then the other one that I remember was it was, I had the advantage of someone that was already on the gig saying, yeah, this last guy, the problem was this. So I just kind of went in knowing what they didn't want. Mm-hmm. So doing some, you know, if you have a connection to these auditions, wear them out, man. Hey, what is it they're looking for? What is it that triggers, you know, a negative reaction? Try to find these things out. It just, any advantage you can get like that, you're going to go in and it's going to be, you know, you're at least avoiding a thing or two that was not working in the situation previously. So there's some things you can, that can just help anxiety right there of just, you know, when we talk about due diligence and preparing songs and all that, man, sometimes it might be talking to your connection and finding out the reality of what they are looking for, that kind of thing. You know, don't assume. If you have eyes and ears in the situation already, you got to take advantage of that.
Absolutely. And when you put those two things together, like you were mentioning, which is the preparation and then any little bit of information that comes from what they're looking for, if you merge those two things together, you really can't do anything but feel good about coming out of that audition, whether you get it or not, which is what we're going to talk about next.
Well, one more thing.
Yeah.
Like, because I had that insider's view on that, I knew we're going to read down some charts. Not that they were difficult, you know, it's pop tunes or whatever, but we're going to read down, they're going to have you read down some charts because this gig, they're going to chart everything, even if you're not using them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they wanted to see if you could pull that out of your hat and be able to read down a legible drum chart. So I knew that too. So it wasn't thrown at me like, oh my God, what? I haven't read in years. Well, you know, just knowing it was all good, man.
Yeah.
And I got the gig. So there you go. And it probably would have gone a little differently if I'd have been thrown a curveball. Like, hey, let's read down these three charts, you know, and I wasn't thinking I was going to do that. I read okay, but knowing it, it just makes things easier.
Absolutely.
So that's a little bit of reality. But, man, stay within yourself. Golly, we are so guilty of not doing that.
Well, I think part of it has to do with almost all of us feel like that whatever we do is maybe not good enough. Therefore, we have to do more to impress these people. And again, that's when you get to that point of when you're many times not being true to yourself.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's easy to do.
Yeah.
We all have done it. And again, more reason to prepare endlessly and know the environment in the best way you can.
So you got in there, did the audition, and now here come the results. And really, there's only two possible results. You either got it or you didn't get it.
Now,
yes?
You're double talking now.
Well, that's true. That is true.
Let's just go. Let's just stick with the original plan.
All right. So let's say that you get into the audition. And you didn't get it. And you could have either played really well or played really badly, and you didn't get it. Well, we've heard from one of our guests prior of an audition that he went into, and he didn't get it. But he was very thankful, and he was complimentary and nice to the folks. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you thinking about me. And sure enough, 6 months later, he gets the call back saying, hey, this person that actually beat you out on this audition is not on the gig anymore. So make sure you're nice. Be polite.
Yeah, man, that's I can't imagine like not getting a gig and throwing a fit. It's just so crazy to me to think about, but I know people that would.
I was gonna say I've seen people do it.
You know, that's just, that's destructive on so many levels.
Yeah.
You know, what possibly good can come of that?
Yeah. Well, something else that I think can be helpful is if you don't get the gig, and especially if you feel like you played really well and you prepared really well, I don't think it hurts to ask why you didn't get it.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know, you can learn maybe what they were looking for, like if there was something that performance-wise they wanted that you didn't give them. And even to some extent, which can really help your psyche from a standpoint of a playing standpoint, is sometimes if it's an image-related looking thing, it's just, if they're honest with you, they just be like, man, you just didn't look the way that we needed you. And there's nothing you can really do about that.
It is what it is.
And then there are other times where you can be up for something, and let's say that there's another intangible that the other person had that you didn't even think of. Like, for example, let's say the person who got the gig had a good bit of acting chops and that they needed some sort of like acting work in addition to the performance type thing. And then all of a sudden, it just rings a bell to you like, well, that's, I see now why this person got it. And even possibly then, maybe I need to work on that if that's something that interests me.
See, I would be like, I don't think I'd get upset if I didn't get a gig. I think I'd ask them, like, do you know of any tribute bands of your music? Because there's a million of them and I need work, man. So, you know, where are they at?
That's
kidding, but man, it's true. Tribute bands are killing it. I didn't get the Eric Clapton gig, but this Cream tribute band over here, I'm cranky. I got that covered.
I don't know, John. I could easily see you doing, especially like the Jamie Oldacre stuff, man.
Yeah, that would make a little more sense than Ginger.
Yeah, definitely. I can see that.
I'd be okay with that.
Now, a lot of times folks will think that the end result of a successful audition is getting the gig. And I'm going to say you're partially right, but the real end success is keeping the gig.
Man, isn't that the truth?
Jeez. Oh, geez. Boy, let me tell you, this is hitting close to home because this is a certain situation that a group that I'm in is dealing with right now. Because let's say that you go in and you do a successful audition and you are offered the gig, all right? Well, naturally, you're going to thank the folks because, hey, they're giving you a gig. But let me tell you, one of the most, if not the most important thing moving forward to keeping your gig is you need to successfully integrate into an existing band situation or corporate situation. And if you've done your research prior to this, you should know a little bit what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
And being a kind of person that's going to force your will of the way things should be onto a pre-existing band condition is the quickest way to get yourself thrown out and for them to start auditions again.
Yeah. Someone else going to live the nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm, folks, I'm telling you, getting the gig is wonderful, but you got to keep the gig. So my advice to anybody that gets a gig, whether you're going to be in a band, whether you're going to be in an orchestra, a cruise ship, any kind of a theme part, anything like that, for the first little bit of time, spend the majority of your time when you're in green rooms and buses and stuff like that listening. Figure out what's going on. You know, get sort of the lay of the land before you start opening your big yapper.
A great idea.
Yeah, and getting yourself in all kinds of hot water. Because let me tell you, that's, again, the quickest way to get yourself thrown out of a great situation is to just be an insufferable ass.
Yeah, that's a good one. Man, I've told people I like doing this podcast because I can, you know, sometimes you can be vulnerable and really put it out there and all that. So I'm going to do that.
Do it.
I have been fired 3 times. And, You know, in some people's eyes, that might be a lot. In some people's eyes, they're like, only three?
Yeah.
You know, it is what it is. The first time, I was just green. I didn't burn any bridges. I took it like a man. I knew I was, you know, I was young, really young, playing with really amazing, really established, very seasoned players, which in of itself was amazing. I got let go. They hired me back 3 months later, and my confidence, my approach, everything was night and day better because they wanted me. So not blowing up, not beating myself up, realizing my weaknesses as a young player, being aware of them, trying to work on them. They called back. I went in with a different approach. Hey, they want me here. I'm going to give 110%. I'm going to be aware of my shortcomings and improve on them. But I'm also going to be like, you know, hey, I'm doing my thing. This is what I do. And that's okay. So there was one instance where it really was a pretty good outcome by not showing your butt or, you know, beating yourself up too much and psychologically going in the toilet or whatever, which we can relate to, and creatives especially, just, you know, it can get really dark. Another situation was I didn't like the direction of a band. I didn't know how to deal with it, and I got kind of dark. So it was like, rightfully, like, man, you're a drag, get out. And I learned a great lesson from that. Like, look, walk away if you're miserable. Don't make everyone else miserable or make them miserable and jack your reputation up. So there's a thing you can learn from. And the third time, it was a great opportunity. I played pretty good, evidence of that. But I was just immature socially. And it just ended up being my demise on the gig. And I regret it. It was a drag. You know, probably wouldn't have been a long-term gig regardless. Mm-hmm. Just the number of changes in that particular setting all the time. But I went through a period where I was just kind of pissed off and like, blah, 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 not looking at it realistically. But once I did, I came to realize exactly what you just said. Man, lay back and figure out the vibe of this, the atmosphere, the circumstances, who's in charge, who likes joking around, who doesn't, all of that stuff. Just get a handle on it before you start running your trap or imposing your will, and you're gonna have a lot better chance of keeping the gig.
Well, let me tell you, once you've gotten the gig, we all naturally want to continue, or should want to naturally continue to improve, right?
Right.
Well, the improving is not just the playing. It's exactly what you said. It's improving the entire band relationship, the group relationship, the overall personal vibe of that band. Because let me tell you, it works a whole bunch of different ways. Not only the group dynamic of the group in a green room or the group in an airport or the group in a bus, but even from the performance aspect, man, there is a certain intangible that will come off of a stage.
No doubt.
When a group is well integrated personally, mm-hmm. musically, it's an audience can feel it.
Absolutely. I think when we talk about chemistry of musicians, I think that's as vital a part of it as like-minded playing and where you feel time and what your influences are. That factors in huge in my mind. You know, if you're playing with someone you can't stand, you know, what's the rare occasion? Hendrix band, maybe, yeah. You know, Cream maybe, but other than that, you know, it typically isn't going to fuel positive, you know, results. It's just going to continue to deteriorate.
Well, to kind of button up this last little bit of the topic, there's an old saying that I'm quite sure you've heard before. And it is in reference to someone in a group that's just not getting it. That's maybe been even warned or talked to a couple times about, look, you know, you got to watch yourself when you're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And that old saying is, sometimes you don't learn until you lose the gig.
Oh.
Yeah. So we're trying to help you to where you can learn as you go along, mm-hmm. because nobody wants to lose the gig, especially after you've jumped through all the hoops. If you've done everything we've talked about here and done a good job in auditioning and preparing for the audition, finding, preparing, being on time, doing a great job with the audition and being honest with yourself and honest with the other people, but then are just, you know, you drop the ball getting into the gig, that's the worst case scenario. You just don't want to have that happen. So learn as you go. Absolutely learn as you go, and don't drop the ball, and don't learn because you lost the gig.
Yeah. Sometimes that can really, you know, I've seen people really benefit from that.
It benefited you the first time, man. Absolutely.
The first time it did, yeah. The second time, you know, the other times, man, I'm human.
Yeah.
It happens, you know, young and immature, you know, not ready for a certain level or whatever it may be. But in general, man, that's gold. That advice is keep the gig, man, because it's dark when you don't.
Absolutely.
I know.
So we're going to finish out today's show with our segment of great underappreciated drummers. And John, I am duly excited, man. I think we got a couple of freaking whiz bangers today, man.
Hey, man. You go ahead.
You want me to go first?
Well, I don't know, man. I usually should go because I'm way less prepared and I don't have all the anecdotes and all that.
I don't care.
I'll go.
I don't care.
My guy. I love this man. I love this man for a million reasons. My choice this time is Al Foster. An amazing, you know, for the most part, jazz musician. I'd say definitely that. He's got a little more to offer, though. But Al Foster, I he's played with a whole bunch of people, Herbie and Sonny Rollins, who I think we both saw him with Sonny.
I saw him in the early 90s, Memphis, New Daisy Theater.
Yep. I probably saw that same tour. Joe Henderson he's played with, but he took, if you don't know a lot about Al, he had the dubious task of replacing Jack in Miles Band. And yes, that mm-hmm. Jack D.
Who had the dubious distinction of replacing Tony Williams.
Let's not take away from Al's thing right now, because that's just not even fair. We're rewinding, and we're going to talk about Al taking Jack's place in Miles' band. It's a given, really. Let's be serious. If you're taking anyone's place in Miles' band,
yeah,
you got your hands full. But anyway, he did it, and it was cool, man. I always thought of it. We were talking about it earlier. Al, to me, is kind of like if Art Blakey and Jack had a baby, you know, because he's got that just that ridiculously deep groove that they both had, regardless of technique, regardless of whatever, you know, and he kind of fits in between them because he's, you know, probably a little more technique than Art, but not nearly as sophisticated in his approach as Jack, but equally as thrilling, especially, man, seeing him live, it's just like you're just holding your breath like, oh, this is great, man. It's just energy and pocket, and even taking it out, there's just that underlying just trench, man, digging the trench. And I just love that about him. And as you pointed out earlier, his first records, was it Blue Mitchell, did you say?
The first record that he recorded was in 1964, Blue Mitchell, The Thing to Do. And it's, man, it is straight up hard bopping post bop stuff.
And really young, like Tony Young.
Yes.
So, man, that gives you an idea of how the elite were digging on him really early on. And he just, the thing I always get about Al, man, is he is himself. He is doing what he does and take it or leave it. And most of the time they're going to take it because he is so musical. and so soulful and just so creative in his own way. You know, I was obsessed with that Man with a Horn record, largely because of Al. You know, the comeback of Miles, we're all excited, all that. But Al just had this funky, swinging thing, man, that just was intoxicating. So Al Foster has some records of his own that are real cool. Mm-hmm. Just great stuff, man. What a swinger. Swinger.
Excellent choice. And again, he's one of those guys that there's not that many of them that can equally play authentic straight ahead jazz and then backbeat oriented fusion stuff.
Yeah.
And I mean, play it well.
Yeah. He's always has his own little lopey thing that, uh-huh. in his groove playing that makes it so interesting. Kind of loose, but just killing.
Yeah, he borrowed that cymbal setup of Eric Gravatt to... We need
much to the chagrin of his 70-year-old shoulders now, probably.
Yeah, we'd like to find out who the first person was that did the vertical cymbal mounting. And I don't want to hear from from our listeners that it was Nico McBrain. It wasn't.
That's funny. I don't know, man. That's a good question. I bet you there'll be some different answers that people are absolutely sure this is a guy, but it might have been some New Yorker we never heard of.
It's probably some weird thing from back in like the 50s where somebody went to Birdland and saw Jimmy Cobb playing, and then all of a sudden in one of the sets his cymbal tilter broke and the cymbal went vertical. Somebody came in on that set and goes, man, Cobb's got those cymbals mounted vertical.
My theory is there was so little room on some of those bandstands that they had to do it that way so that sax player could stand closer to your drum set. I mean, it's that sounds bizarre, but
it absolutely very well
might be true.
It's like the whole thing. People thought that 18-inch bass drums were like, oh, that's just what jazz players play. Well, that's because that's the only size drum would fit in the trunk of a car.
That's right, cabs.
Yeah.
Especially New York thing.
So that's why a lot of guys used 18-inch bass drums. It's just easier to transport. That's it.
And it develops a sound that's like the Nazis are all about. Did I say that? You know who you are.
John, I'm going to go on to my guy.
Is he using a 20?
Heresy!
On a bebop gig? Shoot him. Right now. End him.
I got a 20, man. I got an unbelievable 20-inch Gretsch bass drum, man, that I'll flat out use on a bebop gig. Although I have an 18.
I know, you conformist. I use a 32.
Oh, that's nice, man. Chick Webb, baby.
You know, you laugh, but on a bebop gig, I could probably get away with a 32 because I only hit the bass drum like 7 times a whole gig. I'm definitely not bottom heavy on...
What's this feathering nonsense?
Yeah, none of that.
So, my guy
this
week, man, I've always liked this guy's playing, but he became solidified in my mind in the summer of 1986 when I saw him touring with Heart.
Uh-oh.
And my guy is the criminally underrated Denny Carmassi.
Monster.
First time I ever heard Denny Carmassi was when I was a wee tot. John, I have to tell you that my brother is significantly older than me. He's 13 mm-hmm. years older than me. And so back in the early 70s, when my brother was in high school, he and I was yet to be in school, he would leave his bedroom door open. I would go in, look through his records, and I ran across a Montrose album.
Did it have like kind of a red bikini bottom?
No, it had a whole bunch of dudes with no shirts on.
See, the Montrose record I had, it was like pretty much just the bikini bottom. So we obviously listened to music for different reasons.
Absolutely. Mine, of course, like, was
oh, this is going to be musically relevant. Dudes. It's men.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But it had a very young Sammy Hagar on the cover, which I had no idea who that was at that time. But it also had the aforementioned Denny Carmassi playing drums. And brother, when I heard Rock the Nation and that cowbell groove on there, that certainly imprinted in my mind.
I can certainly see why. It's cool.
And then also going back and listening to that same record, there was a tune that Sammy Hagar, I think Sammy Hagar and Ronnie Montrose both wrote the tune Bad Motor Scooter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's got this great halftime groove and then blasts into a straight-up 4-4 just face-melting rock groove on the choruses, right? Mm-hmm. So that was my first introduction to Denny Carmassi before I even really knew who he was, right? And then when I became a player, I got to really know him through when he was playing with Hart. And the first record that I heard him on that he made an impression on was the Passion Works album. And there was great tune on there called How Can I Refuse?
Yeah.
Wonderful tune, man. And that record really didn't get very much play. That was in actually, I guess you could say that was at the beginning of Hart's kind of reemergence. They were really big in the 70s and then kind of dropped off a little bit.
MTV kind of brought them back.
MTV brought them back. They turned the girls into like 80s metal chicks kind of with the
rocker,
big hair.
Rocker girls.
Yeah. And then the...
And Denny was like real visual and cool and that stuff, that video stuff.
Yeah. And then I suppose that self-titled album, just the Hart album from about 1985, Denny Carmassi was on there. There's some great tunes on there. Denny Carmassi played his tail off on it. And then, again, the aforementioned concert that I saw of theirs in about 1986, it was on that tour. Man, he is a groove maniac, man. That guy plays some of the best feeling time. I mean, it was just perfect because, I mean, you know, Hart kind of straddles several different genres.
Right.
You know, you had that 70s straight up rock stuff like Barracuda and Magic Man and some of those others. And then you got into, you know, very poppy rock to even hard rock stuff of the 80s period. You had like those tunes, power ballads, What About Love, the little poppy tunes like Never.
Hair bands, but with really good singer.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Because most of them didn't have very good singers.
Yeah. And Denny Carmassi, some of his like career highlights with Hart would have been that tune, like How Can I Refuse?
Mm-hmm.
Also, check out, there's a tune, a rocker on that Hart album, the self-titled album, called If Looks Could Kill.
Kick I remember it, that. Man. Yeah.
Kicking.
You know who he always kind of reminded me of as far as the feel? Like, just he and Joey Kramer were kind of.
I can see that.
Like, kind of cut from the same cloth.
I can see that.
Like, they're rockers for sure, but the feel is just like real. I mean, man, just groove. And he always had that. So I kind of always lumped them in the same thing. And interestingly enough, they both kind of reemerged by way of MTV, you know, both of those drummers. And the style of music even was not terribly different. You know, some of those ballads and that. But anyway, that was just a rabbit trail there. Sorry.
Well, there you have it, folks. Denny Carmassi and Al Foster.
Excellent. We, man.
I'm proud of those.
I like that, no doubt. Covering some ground there, too.
What are we going to say this is our best show ever, John?
No, I'm not going to.
All right. See y'all later.
Dang, man. Wait, I'm not gonna give you false sense of hope until I hear it back. It's unfair of you to put that pressure on me.
Until you see the tears of desperation running down my cheeks.
Nah, I'll just laugh at you and kick you when you're down. No, I won't. Listen, it's not gonna be our best show ever. We're gonna continue to bring quality content. That's the mindset you need to be in on. Okay? I mean, improving, granted.
What if we just do like the
I don't want to do any of the old shows any.
The, the,
just,
the college term papers, like, you know, the content is okay, but just give them like huge stacks of paper. Like, we just continue to make the shows longer and longer and longer. Man, those idiots put out a 3-hour show.
That's like some Facebook, you know, responses where the dude just, he buries you in 47 paragraphs where you're like, yeah, cool, you win. You political guru, you win.
Give them the generic thumbs up, right, you know.
I love it.
All right, guys. We hope you enjoyed the show today. Go prepare for your auditions.
No thanks.
Until next week, make sure you guys reach out to us, especially people, again, out in San Francisco, the Bay Area. We want to know who you people are that listen as much as you do from week to week. Holler at us. You can reach us again at Facebook, facebook.com/DrummersWeeklyGroovecast, twitter.com/DWGroovecast. And as always, email us the old traditional way, drummersweeklygroovecast@gmail.com. John, anything else you want to say?
Yeah, Bay Area folk, tell Michael Urbano to get in touch with me already.
Ooh, I smell an interview.
Come on. There, that pressure's on, Mike.
All right, folks. Leave us a review on iTunes before I forget.
Thanks for listening.
See you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.